This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, you in? Order now on the McDonald's app. You can also get reward points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants, 18 plus, rewards registration required, points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Here's Speroni, who rolls the ball out to Cannon. He's got options in front of him. He picks out Thomas. This is a nice looking move from Palace. That's a neat ball to Ambrose, where space on the right, good turn. He crosses into Johnson! Oh yes, back of the nest!
Hello and welcome to the Back of the Nest review show. My name is Chris Hambling, and tonight look back at the match we played against Fulham, reviewing the game, chatting rubbish, looking at all the key points and performances, as well as covering an amount of your contact. And yeah, we'll be back after this short message.
Love our podcasts. Listen to our live radio show on Love Sport every Thursday, 7 till 9 p.m., 558 a.m., DAB Digital Radio, and online, lovesportradio.com.
Right, welcome back. Let me introduce my panel before I do anything further. I'm going to start, as I never do this, with Chris Clark.
What up, comrade?
Oh, here he goes, comrade again. How you doing, mate?
Yeah, very well, thank you. Had a very fun day yesterday as a guest of the Palace for Life Foundation. So, yeah, prawn sandwich brigade experience for me. And, yeah, I mean, enjoyed the game, obviously, and then headed to the Pawsons afterwards. So, yeah, yesterday was fun, and hopefully this show's going to be fun too.
How did you get to be a guest? Why wasn't I a guest? Palace for Life Foundation.
It happened because I'm a Labour councillor locally, and you know, I expressed an interest. But yeah, I was invited through that.
Are you going to share any more about what that experience? Explain. I'm extremely jealous that you were given. Yeah, I am. Yeah, and I mean, I get the feeling that I deserve sort of some sort of preferential treatment every week, and it never happens. And you've got it now, and I just want to know what happened and how.
Well, so I got an email from one of the other councillors, who's actually from the other party, saying, would I like to be a guest of him and the Palace for Life Foundation in the box for Fulham? Which, understandably, I jumped at the chance. It will be on my register of interests, members of the public. Don't worry about this. and I gave my season ticket away for no profit to my mate Dave Rogers, who's a Dulwich Hamlet season ticket holder. But they were away this week, so I gave him my ticket, which was fun.
Well, there clearly is no quality control in this process, but okay, fair enough. Look, I'm just going to have to live with it.
I think you had to finish the marathon march as well.
Oh, for God. I knew you were going to say that. I knew it. Honest to God, the first thing I thought when I said it, when I asked you, was you were going to say it was to do with the marathon march, and I would have got to have gone if I'd made it to the end pub. Right, that's it. We're moving on. One of the other voices you've heard in the background there, Mr. Ed Kelleway.
Good evening.
Good evening. Now, you.
How you doing?
You have proper news, not like Chris's self-serving news.
I do. Became a father since I last been on the show, so, and one more on the numbers of Palace supporters. Isabella arrived 17th of January, so already started brainwashing her. I don't know any nursery rhymes really, so I just sing a repertoire of Palace songs.
Well, exactly.
I mean, it seems to work. She goes to sleep, so. But I think my brainwashing's working because I caught my wife earlier today, who has absolutely zero interest in football. But I went into the room and heard her singing Glad All Over to Isabel. So the brainwashing on both my wife and my daughter is slowly working.
Lovely to hear. And obviously, congratulations again on that wonderful, wonderful event.
Thank you.
And I'm sure... How's your sleep?
Not too bad. Bit broken, but she's not too bad in the main, I think.
Good. I've heard it only gets worse. So, right. no problem. And DR, I mean, so much to talk to you about. DR Kernas.
What now?
I mean, where do I start? I mean, earlier on today, you popped a message into the Back of the Nest chat. Now, the Back of the Nest chat, you know, it's not always the best place to be on our WhatsApp group because there's a lot of topics we talk about. It tends to go all over the place. I mean, it drifted into American football yesterday for far too long, so much so that I was forced to mute. You know, DR tries to populate it with basketball chat, but, you know, and obviously Nick every 6 or 7 minutes puts in a rubbish joke. But generally, you do get some interesting stuff in there. And most of all, roughly every 2 days, DR puts something that's just baffling. So I'm going to read it to you, DR, and you're going to have to explain it.
Oh, okay.
This is from DR Kernas. This was at 9:34 last night. I just burped after I had Diet Coke and my nose went all... No, it actually says my noise. My noise went all fuzzy. What?
My nose.
WTF, this is why I don't drink it. Seemed like the acid went there. Then later on, it just happened again. WTF is going on. There's acid in my nose.
Honestly, look. Long story short, I normally don't drink soft drinks, but I was going past, like, you know, the drink section, and then I saw, like, Diet Coke, and it said zero calories. So I was like, I've had Diet Coke before, but I forgot what it tasted like. So I was like, let me give it a try. So I had Diet, so I grabbed it, I finished the Diet Coke. It wasn't that great, but after five, 10 minutes, like, I felt like I had to burp, and I burped, but the weirdest thing happened. Like, it's, you know when you, like, acid... It seemed like the acid went through my nose and my nose started going all fuzzy. And then I burped again 5 minutes later and the same thing happened. I was so worried. I was like, what's going on? Is something wrong with me? Am I going to pass away? It's not normal, is it? It's never happened to me ever in my life, though. Like when I drink Diet Coke or something, when I burp, there's acid in my nose.
So
am I going to pass away?
But that's not normal. Has it? Have you ever drank a soft drink and there was like acid feeling in your nose? Like your nose was burning. My nose started like it was burning.
Let's find out if this is a shared experience. Ed, has that ever happened to you?
Oh, I can't say I've experienced it.
That's what I'm saying. I've never experienced that as well. It's not like I never drank soft drink in my life. I've had different soft drinks, but never ever has this happened before.
So well, you've only had one answer so far. There's two more of us who are going to comment. Chris Clark, have you ever had your nose go all fuzzy and get acid in it?
No, that's never happened to me.
So finally, DR, well, two out of three so far, not a shared experience. What do you suspect I might say?
No, because it's not normal.
No, it isn't normal. No, that is correct.
Then why did it happen to me?
What you've just... I just don't know. Listen, there's a lesson here, isn't there? When selecting soft drinks, what soft drinks should you select?
No, it was a test. It doesn't matter what soft drink I like drink. Like, I shouldn't have any acid going through my nose. I shouldn't have that feeling. I'm never drinking Coke Zero ever again, or whatever it's called, Diet Coke.
Listen, you know, Dr. Pepper, its tagline is, what's the worst that could happen? And the answer is never... My nose would go all fuzzy and get acid in it.
I've got 1.5 litre of Warby bottle next to me, so for this show, I'm not drinking anything else.
Thanks, DR. As ever, you are a walking mine of entertainment, and we do appreciate you.
I don't want to. Like, I don't want to be entertainment, though. It just happens. I try to avoid it. It just happens. Like, you expect? I'd never thought my nose would start going crazy after I start drinking. Like, it's off. Oh, it's just weird.
No, absolutely not. Okay, before we move on, a couple of things. Seems weird to say this after that conversation, but if you're feeling generous, please head over to your chosen podcast app. Give us a 5-star rating to help spread the word. Loads of you have done that over the last few weeks, and it's really helped us reach more people, and that's really the motivation behind that, because that's why we do it. We want people to hear what we do. And hopefully enjoy it as well. So that'd be much appreciated. Do head over to backofthenest.com. There's loads of articles going up on there. We had a chat in the week with Chewy, who runs that for us at the moment. And he has done roughly 24, 25 articles at the last count. I'd done one, which sort of guilted me into writing another one, which I wrote about Wilfried Zaha. We've written a bunch of articles. I was just going to point you in the direction of backofthenest.com to check out all our written content. More will be going live this week. And if you haven't read it, give my Wilfried Zaha article a read. It's got a lot of positive responses. I was very happy with it. And there's some really great stuff on there as well by some other writers, and plenty more to come. I'm going to expand the content as we go. So that's the admin out of the way there. Up the front of the show as well, just to point you in the direction of the preview show. I was on it last week. Very much enjoyed it. And I think Hesketh's back this week. So the usual lineup of Terence, Albert and Sam will be taking you through the West Ham preview in midweek. And of course, I think it's DR and myself will be on Love Sport this week on Tuesday, 7 till 9 p.m. with Jake Watson.
Yep.
So tune in live. Just Google Love Sport. You'll find out how to join the fun live, and the podcast will be out as soon as it's available after that. Right, that's all the admin out of the way. Let's get into the match review.
Love our podcast. Listen to our live radio show on Love Sport every Thursday, 7 till 9 p.m, 558 a.m. DAB Digital Radio and online, lovesportradio.com.
Right, gents, it's match review time. And as always, we'll start with a team selection. I think let's get cards on the table here. Pre-match, you saw, obviously Coyote was out, replaced by Jeffrey Schlupp. I don't think anyone would have said that they were necessarily surprised by that change, but I would guarantee probably all of you, unless you're prepared to lie, would say that you weren't happy to see that instead of Max Meyer coming into the team, perhaps. And also, we saw Christian Benteke come in at the side up the top. Are you drifting to, pushing out to the left in replacing Wilfried Zaha, obviously suspended after the Southampton match? So those were the changes we saw. And obviously, Batshuayi being on the bench, as well as the other new signing, Bakary Sakho, gave more of an attacking and sort of stronger look to the bench. But let's talk about the decision to start Jeffrey Schlupp. But I'm going to talk to you first, DR, about this. How did you feel before witnessing the match when Schlupp was in Kuyate?
I was not shocked. I was just disappointed because I feel like Max Meyer offers more going forward in terms of creativity. And I think he's on the same level as Jeffrey Schlupp in terms of defending. So, I was disappointed in that aspect. But that's the thing. I feel like Roy, we've gone past the transition stage where Max Meyer needs to get used to the Premier League. I think Roy just doesn't rate him for whatever reason. I think it's mainly due to his physicality, if I was to guess, because you saw yesterday, whereas Jeffrey Schlupp, he was, even though he misplaced a couple of passes, he was still strong. And what he'd done against Tottenham showed that as well, whereas Max hasn't got that. So I think it's mainly due to his physicality, which is going to be hard for Max. But yeah, I was disappointed.
Yeah, it's funny. I was the same. I felt, you looked at the Southampton game, and I think perhaps when we were looking at replacements for players, I mean, first of all, Schlupp is probably, in all honesty, a slightly more natural replacement for Coyote if you're expecting the same system. But what I found was interesting is, it wasn't the same system. We very much shifted to a 4-4-2. I certainly wasn't disappointed to see Jordan Ayew start because of the effort he put in against Southampton. He had a very, very good game. And obviously that was, both the players that we're talking about, I think that's going to be a bit of a theme this week, in that some much maligned players in, I suppose Benteke, Schlupp, and Jordan Ayew were very, very good, were amongst the pick of our players. So I think in terms of looking at the lineup, I just reiterate, I was disappointed with that decision. But as it panned out, Roy seems to know a bit more about things than I do.
That's interesting, Chris. I have a very different view on Jeffrey Schlupp because, everyone knows, I think, if they've listened to this show before, that I'm a kind of a Schlupp super fan, partly sarcastically, but also genuinely. And I think we saw the best of what he can do yesterday in that he ran around. He passed Paul, ineffectively at times, but ultimately he was in the right positions to have shots. And that's, you know, so for me, that answers an important question that actually came in from Max Power through our contacts earlier on. Is Schlupp underrated by Palace fans? My answer is yes. I'll be interested to hear if others agree or disagree.
I mean, with Schlupp, I don't think he's necessarily underrated. I'm not a massive fan of him, and I think he's a good squad player for us. I was a little bit disappointed, like you, Chris and DR, that it wasn't Max Meyer that came in for Kayate. I thought with the lineup, I thought it was a bit more, rather than a 4-4-2, a bit more of a sort of 4-4-1-1 with Ayew playing sort of a bit deeper off of Benteke. Which, if that was the case in terms of how I sort of saw it, Schlupp was playing on the left-hand side of that midfield, and I thought there was a number of times where he just was drifting inside too often, and it left Patrick Van Aanholt quite exposed. And in the first half, a lot of the joy that Fulham got came down that right-hand side when they were able to switch the ball from one side to the other, and their guy sort of playing right midfield, right wing-back, was in a lot of space because he was too high up the pitch for Van Aanholt to go and pick up. And Schlupp had sort of drifted inside more centrally. I don't know if that's just because that's where he has been playing recently, and his mindset is to go in that way. But I thought he left us a little bit exposed down the left-hand side, and we looked a little bit vulnerable down there.
I don't think he's underrated. It's just him. Is he able to do it consistently week in, week out? Because we had a similar problem last season with Wayne Hennessy and Patrick Van Aanholt. I remember when Patrick Van Aanholt, after the Bristol game, he came back, he had a couple of good games, couple of bad games, and Wayne Hennessy as well. So I don't think Jeffrey Schlupp is underrated. It's just the fact of, can he do it consistently week in, week out? He hasn't been able to do that so far. He has one or two good games and then five bad games. It's a bit similar to Patrick Van Aanholt and Wayne Hennessy's situation last season, where both of them, especially after the Bristol game, they didn't really go any like good run of games. They'll have one good game and then one bad game. So if Jeffrey Schlupp can do it week in, week out, then yes, he can be a good squad player. But I think that's why many fans are frustrated of not seeing Max Meyer, because Jeffrey Schlupp doesn't. You never know what to expect from Jeffrey Schlupp, and I don't think he should personally start games.
It's interesting. I was listening to Roy's comments after the game regarding Jeffrey Schlupp, and he clearly knows what fans are saying and what they're thinking about it, because he sort of referenced the fact that the players that the fans look to every week aren't necessarily the players that the coaching staff feel have the biggest impact. And he was suggesting that, you know, they have a lot of trust in Jeffrey Schlupp as a left back and as a left-sided midfielder and as a left midfielder and as a left midfielder in a three. Those were the positions that Roy picked out as Jeffrey Schlupp's, you know, strong point. And I think there's a lot of truth in the system and in how, you know, how well Schlupp plays. I think for me, underrated is a difficult word. I think we've all kind of struggled with it a little bit, because there's an element of truth to that in the fact that any player tends to be written off very quickly after, a couple of bad games or some really noticeable points of, you know, errors or something like that, where you'll pick up, that'll be how they're defined. Where clearly, you know, all of last season he played a very important role in the squad. And this season he's got four goals now, and he has played well in spells. But I think, you know, the point you made, Ed, of the system being more of a 4-4-1-1, I've looked at the sort of the average player positions in the stats this week. My source is whoscored.com this week, by the way. And you're right. You're right in the sense that Ayew was slightly off Benteke. Benteke was the spearhead. But, you know, it's interesting to see the average position of Townsend on the right matches the average position of Jeffrey Schlupp on the left. So you actually had, you know, Schlupp's role was much more attacking this week. And it did leave a bit of a hole on the left-hand side of the pitch defensively. And we did see Patrick Van Aanholt exposed quite often on that side. And, you know, he tweeted after the game he didn't feel he had a particularly great game. But bringing it back to Jeffrey Schlupp, I think the way we played against Fulham, that gave him the biggest opportunity to show what he's good at. He got forward many times, was, you know, got an awful lot of shots off. Most of them were blocked, in fairness. But, you know, the reason he pops up at the end as well, to tuck in from Batshuayi's strike, is simply that we had that fluidity and that flexibility once we made a few changes to go 4-3-3/4-5-1, and it was Schlupp who was pushed forward into the kind of the Zaha role, if you like. And that's why he was able to get in the box and tuck the chance away. So I think the game was very much made for him yesterday.
The other thing, I mean, you're quoting stats there, Chris. I've just had a quick look on the BBC website in terms of numbers, and Jeffrey Schlupp's shots on target, 70%, 7 out of his 10 shots have been on target. That compares to the highest other one of anyone being Luca, which obviously is going to be significantly penalties and also that worldie, who's got 67. Jimmy Mack, who's got a similar number of shots and obviously has scored a couple of goals, his shots on target is 38, 5 out of 13. So I think underrated is a fair word for Jeff.
Okay. Well, look, I think we've all given our view on that. It's a great question from Max as well. Thanks for that. But like I say, what I will say about this is any one of us, and there were a lot of us who before kickoff were thinking, you know, what a terrible choice and, you know, thinking the worst. I think we were very much proven wrong by the performance of Jeffrey Schlupp yesterday. And I'm so happy about that as well. I don't think there's any of us who are unhappy when a player gets on the pitch, plays well and proves us wrong. So, OK, we're still sort of talking around the lineup and the system here. I mentioned the system that, you know, it was a sort of 4-4-2 and it went into a 4-5-1 after the late changes. I'll ask you this, Ed. We're starting to see, you know, a bit of flexibility, a bit of almost creativity in the tactical setup under Roy in the last few weeks. Is that something that we've been unfair in the past, perhaps on this show, where we've said he's too rigid and he doesn't like change and all this kind of stuff? Has he been doing those things anyway, or do you suspect that there's been you know, a bit of a awakening about how best to use his squad and how best to, you know, about the fact we've maybe become a little bit too predictable?
Yeah, I mean, I think sometimes, yeah, like you say, we have said that he's a little bit too rigid, and there's not always a plan B, or if there is, it comes too late in the game to really affect things. I think the slight change up yesterday was obviously slightly forced upon him by the fact that Wilf was suspended. So you've got to do something a little bit different. The shape of it surprised me a little bit. I thought it would be the same sort of with the sort of, yeah, Benteke and the three sort of behind him. And I thought Ayew would sort of almost go like for with Wilf and play more out wide. So it was nice to see him playing off the striker. And I think that was yesterday was Ayew's best game in a Palace shirt. I think he really impressed me yesterday. I don't think he's a leading the line striker. He hasn't got the attributes, physical attributes, the size to do it like Benteke or Wickham can do it. But yesterday, what suited him perfectly in that role, it was a bit like Shamak a few years back when he was at his best for us. He can just be really busy in there, a real nuisance for their players. He turned possession over a lot of times yesterday, just robbing it off their deep-lying midfield player, Seri, and started attacks for us. So it was nice to see Ayew in that role yesterday and to see him play as well as he did, because I've been a reasonable critic of him since he came. Yeah. Hasn't impressed me a great deal, but I think, you know, we definitely saw the best of him in that position that he played in yesterday.
Definitely, and it's funny, the impact that competition for places has on players, it just cannot be underestimated. I mean, again, that, you know, I think it's as much a subconscious thing as a conscious thing, because, you know, with Wickham, well, okay, he had a knock yesterday, nothing serious, but failed a late fitness test and so wasn't selected. But having Benteke start, and obviously, you know, Sakho can play up top as well as Batshuayi, and, you know, and Ayew started, we've got an awful lot of competition there, and I think Ayew has definitely risen to that challenge. So yeah, very interested to see.
I don't think it's only competition though. I think after that Wolves game, we've seen a different Jordan Ayew. He seems more confident after scoring a goal. I think competition, of course, plays a part. But just for a striker, if you score a goal, you're just buzzing, and then next week you just want to go out there and play again. And I think that's why Ayew has been performing so well, because he scored a basic. Well, it was a very good touch from Ayew against Wolves, but he scored that nice goal. And then afterwards, it seemed like he's changed. He's just turned the corner.
So I think you're absolutely right there. Confidence is probably the biggest factor in how well a player plays. You know, there's all sorts of other things that we can talk about, but you know, you're absolutely right, Dio. I certainly didn't mean that. You know, this competition for places was the only factor. You're right; he's been a different player since he knocked a couple of goals in, for sure. But again, the work rate's always been there, and I think again, you go back to, you know, Roy's system. Roy's system has a need for a forward player to do that level of work. And I think you go back to the struggles that Benteke had last season and the start of this season prior to injury, where he simply wasn't able or wasn't interested in doing that amount of work. I said we're starting to see, you know, Roy has his favourites for a reason, and we might not always agree with it. And I think, you know, had Mitrovic tucked away that early chance in this game, things might have gone differently. We could be having a show where we're bemoaning Roy's favouritism of certain players. But this week, we get to talk about the positives of that. I think that's an interesting point to consider. I've just got a question for you, actually, Chris, on the game plan, which is the kind of last bit I want to do on the tactical side of it. So, you know, we're the home side, but we've noticed, I think all of us have noticed, that we struggle to break teams down and we're much better playing on the break. We attempted, well, again, you might disagree with this, but I feel we attempted to beat Fulham by giving them the ball and asking them to take the impetus to come and attack us, because, you know, they needed the points. They're desperate to get a win in that game. So we just thought, well, come and try and break us down, because we've got a good shape. We don't concede that many goals. And we'll hit you on the break. And I feel that that very much played into our hands yesterday.
Yep, I would agree that was the game plan. I mean, you can see if you look at the possession stats, I think that Fulham had, what, 67% possession? But it, mostly, despite their best efforts, their efforts actually weren't that much cop. And I mean, that's partly a product of our solid setup. I thought we were well set up in defence yesterday. You know, Sacco was back to the Sacco who signed for us, came for us on that loan deal with Allardyce a couple of seasons ago. But, you know, going back to the question about the system more... Actually, I've completely lost my thread there.
Magnificent.
Right,
it's almost as good as Ed sitting there with his hand up permanently.
Yeah, sorry. Sorry, comrade. Right. Well, remind me of the question. Oh, it was about the fact we were hitting on the break. Yeah, that was clearly the setup. In terms of selection, I mean, the one thing that I would have liked to have seen Meyer start too, but I thought again, Jimmy Mack looked tired yesterday, and that's who I'd have dropped to accommodate Meyer yesterday. I would have liked to have seen him play.
It's an interesting point. Again, you know, he could come under that category of an unsung hero. I know, you know, again, neutrals who watch Palace have a tendency to say, oh, you know, MacArthur goes under the radar a bit. I think he goes in spells where everyone talks about how important he is. But, he is certainly a Roy favourite. Again, that has pros and cons. But I think I've noticed a lot of people talk, you know, it's been creeping in where every week we sort of go, oh, you know, why isn't Max starting? I know Patrick's got a hashtag of free Max Mayer going. And I think a lot of, you know, as people start to ask the question, well, hang on a second, what has he done to make you think that he should be playing every week? You know, from my perspective, you can just see the class, the speed of thought that he has, and how, look at the second goal yesterday. He's a bigger part to play in that as anybody. Just, you know, perhaps only Mamadou Sakho starting it off with the challenge that he makes and digging in that way can claim, you know, more of an influence there. But, you know, it's just he is a very tidy, clever footballer, and you need those types of players in your squad. I think we're just desperate to see that. Otherwise, you know, why would he stay at Crystal Palace to stay on the bench?
Just quickly going on to Mako, I know Chris mentioned him. I think Mako's really, I don't know, he's a bit like, not like Jeffrey Schlupp in terms of his style of play, but the inconsistency. It's like we're not really seeing the Mako we saw previously. Yesterday, simple passes, especially in the first half, you're just misplacing it. And he didn't really offer much. But I think it just goes, as you said, Hambo, Roy just prefers his players. And if that wasn't the case, I feel like the competition, there's actually players there that could potentially get inside. And I think, like, it's damaging us in a way, because Mako, once again, it wasn't a great game, but next week he will definitely start. but no one really talk about it because he's really gotten away with it this season.
Yeah, I think that's true. Look, he does have an important role to play, and one of those roles that he does play within the side is being an organiser, being one of Roy's voices on the pitch. And again, that shouldn't be underestimated. But I agree with what's been said. I think, you know, if I was looking to fit Max Meyer into the team, and I would be, because I think he's a very, very good footballer, I think that's probably the route that I would go down. But okay, well, that's a little look at the sort of game plan and the tactics and what we thought around the team selection. And we'll get into more about how that panned out in just a moment. But it is that time of the week where we go to Mr. DR Kernaz for his stat of the week.
DR's Stat of the Week, sponsored by Dr. Pepper.
Okay. Even though Vicente Gaita didn't have much to do yesterday, since coming into the starting lineup, he has been very solid. We're averaging 2 points a match this season when he plays for 90 minutes. Thanks to Patrick O'Connor for that stat.
DR's Stat of the Week, sponsored by Dr. Pepper. DR Stat of the Week has no affiliation with Dr. Pepper. DR was not aware they even still produce Dr. Pepper. He claims that nobody drinks Dr. Pepper, especially people from South London, and that drinking Dr. Pepper is a thing of generations past. This is not the view of Back of the Nest in general. Other soft drinks are available. DR's view should always be taken with a pinch of salt.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
True or false, the defence looks more comfortable with Vicente Gaita in goal. I'll give it to Hamba.
I think it's true. I'd like to answer that question by focusing on what Vicente Gaita, I've pronounced it correctly, Gaita. I think what he brings to the team is kind of a sense of urgency in goal. And I hope people know what I mean by that. So first of all, I go back to sort of body language, and people might not agree with this, but I think the statistic, whether it's accurate or not, is that, 80% of communication is non-verbal. And I think if you look at how he carries himself, and how attentive he is to what's going on in front of him, how quick he is to come and claim the ball, he's always talking, he's always, pointing and organising his players around him. So you look at the fact that he went through an entire match yesterday without facing a shot on target, but he was still involved for 90 minutes plus, 96 minutes, I think it was in the end. When you look at him, he just looks like he's at the game. He's involved every single second. He's in that goal, whether he's directly doing something or not. And I haven't always had that feeling with a variety of goalkeepers in the past. I like everything about how he keeps goal. And I think he's an incredibly important player for Palace. So I have to give it a very big true DR.
But don't you think that credit has to go to the coaching staff as well? Because even when Wayne Hennessy was there, we were still keeping clean sheets and the defence didn't seem that much off the pace. And if you look at majority of our goals, well, not majority, but there's been so many cases that we've conceded goals due to individual errors. And that's mainly due to, I don't think that's mainly due to the goalkeepers, though. That's mainly due to the individual defenders. What do you think?
I'd say it's an interesting point. I'll let Ed jump in on this in a sec. But I do think it's a point worth making that, certainly, I would point to Sacco and Tompkins ahead of whichever goalkeeper it is and say that they have a huge help in hand there towards any kind of clean sheet. But I think the defence is a unit, and I think it looks a more comfortable, confident unit with Vicente Gaita there.
I think just going what I was saying about, you know, credit to the coach and staff and things. I think obviously yes, because we, you know, we saw an improvement in Wayne before he's lost his place to Gaeta. But also, I think that goes back to what Chris was saying earlier about competition for places. It's no coincidence, since, you know, his improvement at the start of this season is after Gaeta's come in, and he knows that there's someone else that's really going after that number one spot. But in terms of the back four, I do think he's just, I feel a lot more confident with him in goal. Although, like we say, he didn't face any shots yesterday. Everything he had to come out for and claim was confidently taken, high balls, low balls. And having, you know, play football, play as a centre-back, when you've got a keeper behind you that you have that confidence in, that you've got no doubt in your mind when he gives you that shout, you can comfortably duck out of the header and he's going to come and claim the cross, no issues. It does give a back four that much more reassurance. And I think that's just a nice, sort of added a little bit more to what was already a very solid back four, but having him behind them, it just, you know, that makes it a very sort of solid base for us to build from. And you know, it's promising for the rest of the season that he seems to be settling in quite well, and a good understanding with Tompkins and Saka.
I think the thing that I observed relates back to something that Hambo said a short while ago, which is the extent to which Comrade Gaeta was communicating with the defenders and asking them to move to the left before he kicked the ball out, for example, because he was planning to send it down the middle. And so, you know, you wanted the players back in position. I thought that was really notable and something that Wayne didn't used to do. Maybe he's got better at it since. But the other thing is that, I mean, his distribution is really, really good. He gets the ball into the right place. And for once, we actually had someone, you know, who he could target. Because, I mean, for a while, you've had a goalkeeper trying to play to Jordan Ayew, who, with all due respect, is not a target man. When Wickham came on a few games ago, that changed things. It meant that he'd got someone to play to. And, you know, Benteke was having considerable joy from the attacking ball. So, I think it's a pivotal change for us in terms of the way we can play, because it means we're not just dependent on pushing it out to the left to Sacco, who does the diagonal pass that Delaney used to do. He looked really good. And the last thing that I will say is Gaeta, his celebration when the second goal went in at the end was really great. Just watching him drop to his knees and punch the air. That's actually been the photo that's been used by the club to promote the 17 minutes of highlights. Can't believe there were 17 minutes of highlights from that game. But
I have to disagree with it, Chris. I think Vicente Gaeta, the main issue with him is his distribution. Yesterday, there were so many passes, especially from goal kicks, that I noticed that fell short and didn't go to Benteke. And whether it was, you know, defenders passing back to him or goal kicks, there were so many situations like that. I think that's what I'm really surprised about. I thought Vicente Gaeta would be a better distributor, but maybe yesterday he had an off day, but it was really poor. I expected him to kick more balls to Benteke, and there was, at times, it was just like, what's going on? Is it a wind? Why can't you just kick it all the way up the pitch? Whereas Wayne Hennessy, we haven't had that situation where he can kick the ball all the way up the pitch. But that's me being harsh, by the way. But yeah, that's my only problem with Gaeta is actually his distribution.
I think that's DR makes a fair point. There was a couple of goal kicks yesterday that came up really short. So I don't know what the wind was like down on the pitch. It did look like a couple of them hung up in the wind, but it seemed to me like, Wayne has a massive kick on him, doesn't he? But the players and Benteke and everyone set up as if it was Wayne kicking. And Gaeta, even on a good day with no wind, is not going to hit the distances that he's hit. So it looked sort of worse than it was, because they were used to, you know, Wayne putting it 15, 20 yards into the other team's half. So
I'm not so sure I agree with either of you, to be honest. I think that, well, there's been certainly a couple of moments that Gaeta has kicked just as long, if not longer, than Wayne. I think maybe conditions yesterday were a factor. I think, you know, again, like distribution, I've generally been impressed with, but, you know, I did notice yesterday that he was struggling at times. So whether it's maybe because he was out with that injury and he's, you know, taking it a bit easier on the calf, I don't know.
There was a couple that didn't even make the halfway line yesterday.
So. Yeah. Yeah, odd, but it's not something I'd noticed before. So I guess we'll see how that one pans out. Okay, great discussion there. Enjoyed that, guys. So let's move on slightly now and sort of talk about the goals. And We'll talk about obviously the penalty first, and you're very similar to the Spurs game where a sort of inexplicable handball. But I think what's important to note that first of all there was some very good work on the right hand side between Townsend and Wan-Bissaka. I think, you know, McArthur going over there to help out and getting his head up and just putting a ball in. That's what Benteke gives you. He gives you a target to aim at. You know, and you know, the Benteke that's come back from injury looks a lot more likely to get into a proper tussle with the defenders. And, you know, a mistake happened and we took advantage of it. And DR, you noticed something interesting with Mitrovic talking to the keeper about where Luka was going to put the penalty. He was right, but he couldn't stop it, could he?
Yeah, I looked at Mitrovic. He just caught my eye and he was near the halfway line and he was just pointing towards the right. He was just like to the goalkeeper, he's going right, he's going right, he's going right. And I was like, wait, what's going on here? Because I know they're very close mates, so I was actually scared. And it did go to the right and the goalkeeper did get a little touch, but it managed to go in. So that was a scary moment, but that was just foolish from the Fulham defender. I think Ranieri, even after the game, he said, what is he doing to his own player? And that's really telling. Imagine your own manager slagging you off for doing a mistake like that.
He did. I think there was some suggestion on the Match of the Day that he said stupid. He was saying stupid foul when he said stupid fall. But who knows? I think both are true. But listen, it was good for us to take advantage because I think Roy's comments after the game were absolutely spot on in that we weren't playing particularly well up until that point. But as soon as we got that penalty, we got that extra bit of confidence and of course, went on to win the game. Whereas I think, realistically, up until that point, Fulham have had the best chance with a Mitrovic missed header, which, again, Tompkins probably just took his eye off the ball for him to miss that. But it was a great moment to go one up.
You know what? In the first half, I know the second half was a different story, but in the first half, Fulham did actually play decent. They were passing it really good. At times I was like, what's going on? Is this Fulham or is it Barcelona? They're just taking the time and passing it forward. But it's just their crosses into the box. I think we got away with it. Their delivery into the box wasn't that great. But of course, in the second half, that changed. But you should, you know, we have to give, I give credit to Fulham for that first half before the goal, because they really, if their delivery was better into the box, the game could have been like different. They could have scored two goals or three goals because Mitrovic is, of course, a threat. But so we got away with it. That's how I see it.
I think about them in the first half, I mean, for all the possession, obviously Chris mentioned the possession stats earlier, for all the possession they had and passing the ball around, apart from that Mitrovic header at the near post that he probably should have done better with, they didn't create an awful lot else. I mean, the possession they did have was in areas that we were quite comfortable to let them have the ball and knock it around, and they didn't seem to have a great deal of ideas other than just try and work an opportunity to get it in the box and hope Mitrovic can get on the end of something. So for all of their possession and nice passing, there wasn't a great deal of sort of cutting edge about them. So I wasn't, you know, overly panicked by that.
No, absolutely right. I think producer Sam said it in one of the chats earlier on that, you know, she never seemed worried. And I would go along with that. I never felt like Fulham were going to score at any point, really. And that's as much, I suppose, a condemnation of their setup and the way they were playing as it is about how well we did. I'm going to very quickly break for it's a peculiar thing on a podcast. It's a live update of official news, but you know, obviously it's recorded on a podcast, so it's not a live update. Anyway, Yaroslav Yak, don't talk back, has joined FC Sheriff of Moldova on loan. They're also known as Sheriff Tiraspol till the end of the season. So big news there, DR. What are you thinking?
And I'm going to go in a little rant here. And this is this is what I'm on about. It's just like, who scouted Yak and who scouted Rakip? It frustrates me that there's people, I hope they're not employed, but I have a feeling that they are. It's just like, what did you see in Yak? He came to our under three, like he played for under 23s, one of the worst players for our under 23s, more than our first team. Went to Turkey, one of the worst teams in the Turkish First League, played only 5 games, and now he's joining a team called Sheriff. Like, you might see something in a player, but what did they see in him? Well, honestly, that's just frustrating.
Let me tell you who scouted Yaroslav, or Yarek Yak. It was a guy called Omar Yabrudi, who worked, worked with Dougie Freedman. And
well, that's what annoys me with Dougie, because there was rumours as well in the January transfer window. I need to get this off my chest. There was rumours in the January transfer window that Dougie wanted Bolasie back and that Roy didn't. But there was, like, we're still trying to go for him. And that's what frustrates me. It's like, how much control does Dougie have? And at the end of the day, Roy's still the manager.
Wait. So first of all, that's a rumour. Second of all, Roy has all say-so on who we actually sign. So it's weird to get annoyed about something that you don't know is true, which is half the problem. But, I mean, for the record, Yabrudi was the one who recommended Bolasie to Palace when he was at Bristol City, so which was a great signing for 300k, wasn't it?
But how can you go from that to this? Well, like, what happened with Yak? Well, Bolasie, there was clearly something there, but how did he suggest Yak?
So again, I guess Yak is a development signing, if you like, and I think there's a lot of signings that teams do make for low value. Some pan out and some don't. A lot of the time, the problem with both Rakip and Yak, right, was that the club intended to sign other players and didn't. So we got left in a position where the club were essentially pushing those as our two transfer window signings, when realistically neither was going to play in the first team. One was a loan so we could have a look at him, and the other was a centre-back who, you know, the scout believes will eventually play to a Premier League level, but it certainly hasn't panned out like that. I think it's really, the difficult thing is people are understandably frustrated, and you've just demonstrated that you're understandably frustrated about it. But it's pure, I think it's more about how the players were presented rather than how the players actually are. You know, you're allowed to take a punt on a signing and it's allowed not to work out. The trouble is, you know, we made it out like they were going to play in the first team.
Yeah, I think you've sort of hit the nail on the head there, Chris. I mean, with Yak, I mean, it's a low risk, potentially high reward signing, isn't it? Because I don't know what we paid for him. Not very much in the grand scheme of things. I very much doubt he's on big money. But if he comes good in the terms that Bolasie did, and he turns into a proper Premier League centre-half that we have for a few years, and we sell on for big money like we did with Bolasie, then it's great. If it doesn't work out, we ship him off again. Well, you've lost, you know, a couple of million quid maybe tops in the grand scheme of things isn't massive amounts. So it was a bit of a gamble, but a fairly low risk one. But like you say, it's the way that we didn't sign anyone else and they did. You know, the Twitter's putting out like signing videos and interviews of them like they're proper first team signings, and then they don't play, or they do play in the under 23s and they're pony, that people get annoyed and frustrated that that's what the club have come up with. So,
yeah, it's like if you go back, exactly right. You go back a little while and think when we signed, I think Simon Thomas from Boreham Wood. Like, we didn't put out a massive signing video about him holding up a scarf and standing in front of the Sellers pitch. And, you know, he wasn't like a marquee signing. He was a player that joined us, played for the under 23s, got on the bench a couple of times. I think it might have even made a first team performance. But it was clear he was someone we got from non-league to have a CV would develop. You think about players like Kwesi Appiah, who's, you know, he's forged himself a good career, but, you know, never really troubled the first team as such. You know, you make these signings all the time. And the truth is, with development signings, particularly if you're going abroad for an established player for a player who's not established, or you're, you know, picking a non-league signing, I think failure rate's pretty high on those. And, you know, let's face it, Yak somehow managed to get two caps for Poland. So,
how? He joined FG Sheriff. I thought that was an American team. I didn't even know. Like, it sounds, what is an FG Sheriff? I've never heard of that.
I'm thinking, though, if he got a couple of caps for Poland, Dio, might be worth having a look in your family history, see if you can qualify for Poland.
What's the scout's name? Omar, what? Give him to watch me play football, because I might have a chance at Palace as well.
I'm sure he's had a look at you when you played at Sellers a couple of years back, I reckon.
Oh, yeah, I remember.
Yeah. So anyway, that was a small diversion there. So we'll jump back. We were in the middle of talking about the goal. We'll talk about the penalty. Let's talk about the last goal as well. And that ties into a comment we got from Mike Scott of this very parish, who mentioned it was the Sacco tackle. He said, how good was that Sacco slide tackle? and Wan-Bissaka's 28 slide tackles he put in there. We'll talk about Aaron Wan-Bissaka in a bit, but it's great to see with that second goal that started off with a proper challenge from Sacco. And I didn't realise until the watching the post-match interviews. Excuse me. A little burp there. Keep that one in, Sam. Sacco was actually ill and didn't train Friday. So basically turned up on match day, having not trained from being ill on the Thursday night. And to put in a performance like that was absolutely astonishing. He starts the move by putting in a crunching tackle, really perfectly timed, gets up and swings a foot to knock the ball into centre midfield as well as a secondary challenge. Then it sort of sets Max Meyer away. Lovely control and move. Then we just play a lovely little move on the break. Ends up on the left-hand side of the box, interchange with Max Meyer and Andros Townsend, finding Mishi Batshuayi off the bench. Straight away, a brilliant impact. Lovely little control, quick feet. Gets a brilliant shot away. It's a good save, good strong hand to it, but super Jeffrey Schlupp is on hand to tuck it away. And it's... I was actually on the edge of the six-yard box. It was said to be our first goal from inside the six-yard box this season, but I thought it was just outside when I looked at it. But anyway, it doesn't really matter. Great finish, great move, great goal. And guys, a fitting reward, I think. I think we deserve the 2-0 after that second-half display, wouldn't you say, DR?
Yeah, I think so. As I was saying, in the first half, I think Fulham were good in terms of passing, but just in the final third, they weren't as effective. Whereas in the second half, I don't know what happened. They were just scared to play football, I guess. They just kept passing it back. But yeah, we played very good in the second half, even though the defenders didn't have much to do. When they were called on, there's, you know, Sacco and Tompkins, both of them were not 100% fit. They still done a decent job. That was a brilliant tackle from Sacco. And I think that's what you pay Sacco for. He hasn't mistaken him, but then he can do brilliant challenges like that that can lead to goals. So that was fantastic to see. But what impressed me the most is that Batshuayi's footwork and the fact that he's not scared to shoot. The way he just controlled the ball and took a shot, I think that's really promising. I'm excited to see what he can do in the coming games, because if he can keep that up with playing with no fear and shooting when he wants to, basically, that's going to be really effective for us. I think we can get a couple more goals like Jeffrey Schlupp scored.
Yeah, for me, we definitely deserve the 2-0 based on the second half, but it was just a massive feeling of relief for me, really. It was starting to feel like it could go the way of sort of the Watford game, the Southampton game, where we got ourselves ahead, have a few half chances to kill the game off, don't take them, and then we get hit with a sucker punch and either, you know, drop points with a draw or you know, lose the game. So it was a massive relief, really, when we got that second one. We left it quite late to do it, to kill them off. But yeah, like DR says, Batshuayi is very, very encouraging. Little bits we saw of him, lovely bit like footwork. And that's what I think we've lacked from strikers, whether it's been through sort of Benteke's lack of confidence because of his goals drying up before he was injured. You know, he may be there, or one of the other, you know, players maybe there would have been trying to look to lay someone off and for someone else to have a shot. But you can see Batshuayi, you know, he's a proper striker, and all he wants to do is try and get that half a yard, half a turn, and instinctively knowing where the goal is, just wants to pull the trigger and get his shot off. And that's obviously what led to the sort of little tap in for Schlupp to really kill Fulham off.
It was fantastic that we had such options on the bench, because, you know, I mean, being able to bring someone like Batshuayi on and see the difference that he made, having Meyer and being able to bring him on, you know, I mean, Roy obviously, you know, did it a little bit later than some of us might have liked, but I think the interesting contrast with the Southampton game, where the changes were too late, these changes came at the right time and they were the right changes. So, you know, you have to congratulate Roy for that. And then just specifically on the goal, I was listening to Five Live earlier on, and they were talking about the number of Raheem Sterling's goals that are, you know, relatively simple tap-ins. But, you know, you don't have to demonstrate virtuoso skills with every goal that you score. It's so much of it is about positioning. The fantastic shot from Batshuayi should give us some real confidence about, you know, the impact that he can have in his time with our club. But also just the fact that Schlupp was in that position, as he had been on a couple of other previous occasions where he'd actually had a shot. So many of our players haven't done that this season. And this is, hopefully a turning point that we can just have the confidence and have a go, because, you know, it worked out for us yesterday.
Well, we're talking about Mishi Batshuayi, and we got a comment in earlier in the week from Charles Meyer, who says, I love Wilf, but we look more balanced without him. Should we sell him for the, he's put $60 to $70 million. I can't do the conversion, but that seems low. And use that money to buy Mishi and perhaps another one or two players. Wilf can perhaps play for a club playing in the Champions League, and we can get stronger overall. Thoughts? I'm always troubled by the idea of selling Wilf, and I'm more troubled now because so many people seem to be getting on his back, and that's a little bit what the article I wrote on backofthenest.com is about. It's about, you know, it's all right to question and to criticise form, but, you know, you really shouldn't be running down a player who's done that much for this club. You should be showing a bit more respect than I believe people are. It seems the attitude from a lot of fans in the, you know, in our Premier League days is you're only as good as your last game, and nothing before that counts, which I think is pretty harsh. However, I think there's a really good point being made there, and it might be that this summer we come to the point of it's the right time for Wilf to try something different and move on and play for a bigger club surrounded by better players and just see how good he really is. And I suppose from our perspective, it's nice to see us cope without him. Again, without being too disrespectful to Fulham, it is Fulham, and they've struggled all season. You know, there's so many games where we've looked to Wilf to lead the line and be our best player and get us points where we've played better teams. And I think that's where we would miss him. But having said that, if we get a decent sum of money, accepting we have to give a fair chunk of it to Man United, and we can go and get players in, great. I think there's a chance to keep the club nice and strong. But whatever happens, if Wilf goes, you know, I believe we're a weaker club without him. And that will always be my opinion.
I see that, not, it's going to sound weird, but as like the dream scenario, if Wilf does leave, 60 to 70 million for Wilf is good amount of money. Just like 30 million was for Bolasie. As much as we love him, if an offer like that comes, we can't really reject it, because he is, you know, he's not, that's the best you'll get for him. I doubt another team will pay that in the future. So I think in summer, if a scenario like this does happen and a club does come for 60 million, I think it'll be good if Wilf moves on. For him, I wanted to see him go abroad to a club like Dortmund, play in the Champions League, and that'll help him in that way. He can push on with his career, and as you said, Hambo, that's a lot of money, and we can push on with the club as well by using that money. But in terms of getting Mishi, I wouldn't get too ahead of myself right now, because we've only seen how many, like 20 minutes, 15 minutes of him. Like, I know it was good, but we have to see what he does for the rest of the season, and then we can decide. But I see that as like the dream scenario when he does leave us, 60-70 million, and then reinvest it. But I wanted to go abroad to a Champions League club.
Yeah, wise words on the Batshuayi situation. We don't know long term what he would bring to Palace. I do get that feeling, and I think everyone seems to have been saying the same thing, that he just seems like a character that's just going to fit in at Palace. You know, it's interesting to note that Chelsea refused to loan him to Spurs and kind of insisted that he went to us, which I think perhaps there's a good relationship being built there, particularly from last season with how well Loftus-Cheek progressed at Palace and how well he was looked after. I think that it's obviously nice to have a good relationship going on there. I think Chelsea will want a lot of money for him, and the better he does with us, unfortunately, the more money that will be. But it's a good question, and I think, yeah, it's all hypothetical at this moment in time. But again, I just reiterate, you don't want to lose your best players, but if it has to happen, you know, that's exactly the type of thing you've got to do. If you're going to get a large sum of money for Wilfried Zaha, you've got to go out and spend it straight away and try and plug that gap, try and create something different within your squad that covers what you lose. Let's hope not, but you can see it happening, can't you? So anyway, yeah, great question there. And I want to talk about a few player performances before we finish as well. And I'm going to start with Aaron Wan-Bissaka, getting an awful lot of praise and again linked in the press with a big money move to Man City in the summer. The value put to him so far has been £30 million. The club have said, you know, great.
Sorry.
Great. I'm glad that What are you laughing at?
£30 million for Wan-Bissaka. Like, yeah, I don't want to swear, but yeah, no. are you taking a piss? Like, yeah. Sorry, what? All right, anyway, it continues. That's
thanks to him. But that's the value they assigned to him in the press, and that's apparently what Man City want. I don't doubt for a single second that Man City are interested, or any club that's looking for a right back in the Premier League and abroad will probably be interested, because he is a special, special player. Roy was effusive in his praise once again, said that he had a great game, and he was relieved in the 94th minute when he made a mistake, because he thought he was a robot, which amused me, and that's something I've said before as well. So, look, he's getting all the plaudits, and rightly so. His statistics are absolutely outrageous. Every week we see it, and also now the stories are clear that England are watching him very, very closely. Southgate has watched him 3 games in a row, I think it is now. And the suggestion is he's very, very close to an England call-up, and not just a call-up to the squad. He's very close to being the starting right-back, by all accounts. What do you think of that, Dio?
Yeah, I think he's deserved. Kyle Walker, he's been a bit too inconsistent. And Kieran Trippier, well, we saw him against us when he played for Tottenham. He was really bad. He's gone a bit downhill. His form isn't that great. So I think it's well-deserved. But Wan-Bissaka, when I was just answering Charles's question about Wilf moving on, I think the reason why it is a right time for him, if he does move on, is because we've got another talent in our team, such as Wan-Bissaka, who can attract players. So it won't be as damaging for us. Whereas if we didn't have Wan-Bissaka, then there isn't a star there, a future talent there that would attract players to come. So, yeah, Wan-Bissaka, another great game, and he deserves to start for England. And I won't be surprised if he does when the next self-international breaks come along.
Absolutely. Well, gents, we've talked about a few of the other performances. Jeffrey Schlupp, an excellent game. Jordan Ayew, too. I mentioned Sacco. Anybody else we want to talk about, or anything more that you want to add to those? Now is the time before we get into some listener questions. Dio, it's you again.
Christian Benteke, yesterday, he threw a bicycle kick attempt. And that may seem small to most people, but I look at the bigger picture and I see someone who's come back from injury and his confidence has come back again. Before his injury, Benteke, 2 minute extra touches, and he was a striker that wasn't willing to shoot, which sounds weird now, but he really wasn't. He didn't want to shoot. And yesterday, you just see that bicycle kick attempt. He seems like a new player. And all game long, I think even Roy said it, he got a little bit of a cramp, so he had to come off. But if he didn't have that cramp, he could play for 90 minutes and, you know, be great. He was fantastic when he was on the pitch, and the future's looking bright if he can keep that up.
Can't disagree there about Benteke. The person I wanted to pick out was Van Aanholt, who, I mean, you quoted earlier on, Hambo, that he himself said that he didn't feel he'd had the best game. Now, that actually could, as others have said, be because Schlupp wasn't providing the cover. But, I mean, it's something that we've picked out a number of weeks in a row, that he doesn't look right at the moment. And, I mean, it may even be that, you know, given that Schlupp can play left back, maybe that's the opportunity to move him back there, because Kouyaté will be back soon, hopefully. So that would enable one of the changes that needs to happen. The other one, I mean, we talked a little bit about MacArthur. He's not been at his best over the last few weeks. So, you know, maybe Max for him in due course. But the last one is Tompkins, who had a really strong game at the back. And also took a massive blow to the face, which he was down with that injury for quite a while. And that's the second game in a row that he's taken that. He's often been accused by Palace fans of being, quote, made of glass. Well, you know, I mean, he showed his toughness in that and still continuing to finish the game. So well done to James Tomo.
Yeah, he certainly hasn't missed that many games either. He certainly, when he joined us, he was a little injury prone, you know, in and out of the side with injury, but I think that's kind of been put to one side of late. And like you say, playing through injuries now rather than being kept out with them. There's possibly an element of luck to that, or maybe some decent coaching in terms of the fitness coaching side of things. So who knows? Who knows, really? But two good mentions there. I'll come to you in a second. I just wanted to quickly mention, we were talking about MacArthur And also talking about PVA on the left-hand side there. Well, it's very noticeable in the sort of average player position section that MacArthur was the deepest of the central midfielders. But weirdly, the central midfielders kind of, you know, MacArthur and Milivojevic, you know, were very much stuck in the middle. So, but MacArthur drifting over to the right and giving that extra cover over there. But Luka, more often than not providing that additional cover, because and Schlupp was way up the field in terms of his average position there. So I think there's definitely some truth to what you were saying, Chris. But going back to, I just want to go back very, very quickly to the Benteke chance and the Benteke performance. We didn't talk about it as earlier on, and I really did mean to. If that overhead kick goes in, my God.
Guapalapa, you know, best Guapalapa ever. Like, that's it. He wins Guapalapa's season award. Like, that's it. You can't top that.
And Ed, we've seen Benteke do that for Liverpool against Man United. That's, you know, quite a famous goal of his. The Benteke of last season would never have attempted that. So that, you know, it's pretty much what DR was saying. Are we looking at, you know, that layoff done Benteke a world of good, and he maybe be the striker he was?
Yeah, I'm hoping so. I'm really hoping so. He did look like the sort of Benteke of old, you know, bullying defenders a bit yesterday. That's what led to the penalty. I think their guy's trying to sort of use his arms to sort of lever himself up on Benteke, but Benteke's too strong and the guy's sort of arm is left prone in the air for the ball to hit it. So, yeah, I mean, and if that had gone in, not only for, you know, DR to do a guapalap or whatever he calls it, but just the confidence that would have given Benteke going forward just would have been huge, I think, and just would have, you know, bought him a bit of time, even with his fiercest critics around the ground. But yeah, very promising signs from him yesterday. And as the fitness and the sharpness comes back over the next few weeks, hopefully we see the sort of the Corinthian Benteke of old that we signed and that we saw in his first season with us.
Absolutely. Okay, well, we'll end by doing a couple of the remaining questions that we've got left. I'll start with this one, which was from Cameron, who says, will Batshuayi or Benteke become the first choice, assuming Roy sticks with one up top? I think that's the big assumption. Honestly, I think we'll see a rotation of that player. And I think it's weird at the moment. As much as it sounds ridiculous to say it, you know, Jordan Ayew's kind of played himself into contention there as well, with a couple of really strong games in a row. And I think for me, the best solution there is maybe both. You know, if you think about the fact that Roy, as much as we've been playing this 4-3-3 of late, he does still favour a 4-4-2. We do still have the players that will be able to do that. I think maybe this signing will enable him to play both together. But I think we'll see a real mix depending on opponents throughout the course of the season. I have little doubt that they'll all get game time. What I would say is a bit of caution around Benteke is, I know we, DR sort of mentioned it, the fact that he got cramp and all that. Well, Roy was saying that the medical staff said no more than 45 minutes for Benteke, and we played him for nearly 70, I think. And he was sort of laughing about that. But, you know, it does show you that there's potentially still an injury there because of the long layoff. He might be prone for further injury if we're not careful. So I think we'll need the full squad. So Ed, you've got your hand up. You're on mute, don't you?
I am on mute, yeah. What an idiot. as far as Michi and Benteke go, I think, like you said, it's going to depend on who we're playing, whether we're home and away. In terms of that, but if we can get 4-4-2, they obviously they've played, I don't know how many times they've played for the national team together, whether there's, you know, potential for if we do go 4-4-2, for quite an exciting strike partnership to develop there, could be very interesting towards the back end of the season.
Definitely. Former roommates for Belgium, apparently, so they obviously must be friends, so it could be a very interesting partnership, you're right. Okay, a couple more questions there. I'll take this one. Palace Ash, is Kabaya still an option? Do we need more depth in midfield? Don't know. I believe his agent was looking for a club for him. I think with Yak going out, we might have a space in the 25. I'm not 100% certain in that. It's a possibility. DR, you seem to want to speak
on this? Yeah. I don't think Kabaya will be an option now that Riederwald has stayed. I think if Riederwald did leave, yes, it could be an option, because that's why I think we'll link with James McCarthy. But now that Riederwald has stayed, I doubt that we'll get goodbye.
Sorry, I was reading a message from Chris there. Yes, Chris, we can do that in a bit.
Ooh.
I'll just finish the last. I'm going to ask you a question, Chris. I didn't really notice this, but Mr. Cadbury's parrot has got in touch and said, the ref wasn't incompetent. He was biased beyond belief. I've no idea why or really care why. What did you guys think?
You know that I'm usually the biggest moaner about the standard of refereeing. I actually found myself praising a couple of the decisions that he made. Like he played an advantage that he didn't actually have to allow, you know, but he let play carry on. The move petered out and then he gave the free kick. So I was actually quite impressed with large parts of the performance yesterday. And, you know, I mean, I'm someone who has called for, you know, this very same referee to be dealt with for corruption or incompetence or both. But in this case, you know, I thought he had an all right game, to be honest.
Yeah, it's a weird one. I've got no real recollection of him doing anything terrible, but I guess I think anything compared to what we saw against Southampton is probably
good. Oh, it was the consistency of the bookings, wasn't it? Because Ayew got booked for accidentally treading on the player who'd gone over. Someone else had tackled him. And then a few minutes later, someone did something very, very similar to us, and it wasn't given. So that one... Yeah, there was a question mark there, and I remember moaning about that, but that's the only thing. And previously, I know I'd been talking to the bloke next to me about how I was surprisingly impressed.
Trust me, if we did lose that game, right now this pod will be 45 minutes long talking about referees because he didn't have that much of a great game. But yeah, referees in the Premier League, I can't stand them anymore after what happened with Zaha against Southampton, but let's not go into that now.
No.
Imagine, you know, just, especially you saw Ashley Barnes the other weekend.
And yeah. Ashley Barnes, that's it.
Sink. Surely something will happen there. Someone pointed out today that just really wound me up about earlier in the season when the FA decided to take no action against Pogba for applauding a referee after being sent off. And you're like, oh, right, okay, so we're going to get consistency there. Anyway, you're right. We could go on forever with that, so we won't. Chris has reminded me to mention something we've been talking about the last couple of weeks, and we had the guys on the Love Sports show, and that is the walk and talk that Paul Price, Palace fan, did with Lee Adams, who's a Fulham fan, to raise awareness for Calm, the campaign against living miserably. And the website for them is thecalmzone.net. It's the you know, their motivation, as we talked about on the Love Sports show, was specifically male suicide. It's a subject that doesn't get talked about a lot, and it's, you know, it's much more prevalent than people perhaps realise, and it's a very serious issue, and also general mental health issues. And the message being that, you know, the important thing is to talk about these things, be open, and, you know, problem shared is a problem halved, all that kind of stuff. But do check out thecalmzone.net for further information on that, Chris.
Well said, Chris. I mean, I had the pleasure of having a nice chat with Paul in the Pawson's Arms after the game, and he was absolutely buzzing with the level of support in the box. The Foundation Trust were talking about what a great job Paul had done. They had 70 people on that walk, I'm told. So, you know, really, really impressive numbers, and an initiative that I think there will probably be more of in the years to come. So, you know, well done, Paul. Really important. And yeah, yeah, I was really impressed with that.
Yeah, definitely. I can't, you know, give more respect to those guys, and they deserve it. They are, you know, everybody who got involved in that, all 70, just a magnificent thing. Like I say, they weren't looking to raise money, although they're, you know, quite happy if people want to go and donate to the various causes around. But it's more about awareness. And, if you know, Lee said to me, if any of this reaches one person and that one person decides, you know what, I'm going to go and get help, then it's all worth it. So if you are affected by any mental health issues, you know, you're affected by any kind of depression or anything like that, you know, there is help out there for you. Please, you know, do seek it out. And also look out for other people as well, because there's always signs, there's always something. You know, if you're spending time with someone, you know, possibly spend time with someone at football, it's an outlet for a lot of us where we go and let our frustration out on some guys kicking a ball around for 90 minutes. And I think, you know, you'll know if someone's not quite themselves, or you'll know if, you know, when you hear the things that they're saying and, you know, you really listen to people, you can actually spot the signs and maybe help do something to help them, you know. And the thing to do is, you know, not just, you know, you've got to be there as someone who can obviously listen to them and listen to their concerns, but you remember, you're not a professional. The real thing to do is to really give them that sort of encouragement and freedom to go out and get proper help if they are feeling that way. It's awareness is the most important part of this message. So, you know, hopefully that helps in some small way. Anyway, I know it's a bit of a heavy tone to end the show on, but hopefully very worthwhile for you. So thank you to everybody who got in touch with us this week and helped us shape this show. Thanks to Sam for producing. She's got an awful lot of editing to do on this one. And cheers to my panel. And that's DR, Chris and Ed. And so obviously we do three shows a week. We've got this one usually done on a Sunday, released for Monday morning. You've got the preview show, usually recorded around Wednesday or Thursday and out soon after. And of course, the Love Sport show, which is live on Tuesday night, 7 to 9 p.m. and comes out as a podcast within a couple of days of that. So please subscribe wherever your chosen app is so you don't miss a thing. And join us again next week. Thank you. Bye.
It's the 90th minute. All your mates are around. You've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.